This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Giddy hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
And if they ever come after me, I'll find my way back home. I'll find my way back home. I thought of my love and my family.
Bands, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from beautiful Trinidad World Recording Studios in beautiful Fort Worth, Texas, my studio here in Fort Worth, where the guitars hang on the wall, where the light is warm and low lit and inviting to all things artistic and creative. Bring it forth out of yourself. Call me, 817-733-5256. Come see the studio. Come record here. Or book Phil Pritchett and the full band. Phil@philpritchett.com. Shoot me an email. The great business of music is at hand. This is the show where you come to enlighten your own life, to see the lighthouse in the fog, through the chaos of all the tumbling countries, the debt crisis. Oh, so much going wrong in the world, so much chaos. Where to turn for some sort of light? Your entertainment beacon, if you would. That's right. You have found it. Congratulations and welcome. The P2 Podcast is here for you. My name is Phil Pritchett. Joining me here today, the other half of the didactic duo. You know him and love him for his dark musings on his musical life and all of the things wrong with the world. Kurt South is here. How you doing there, South?
I'm well.
Thanks. Doing very well. Very well. I had a great show last week. Great show last week about the 360 deals.
It was a good show.
Had some good email, some good feedback from some recent podcasts. We hadn't really gotten a viewer mail.
People love me in a Robin shotgun.
That's right. The icon is out there now. The man in the with the shotgun and the jug of wine, the tattered robe, patrolling his house, maybe growing some potatoes or some tomatoes out there in the
corn,
in the backyard.
Pinto beans,
corn,
carrots,
and pinto beans,
maybe squash,
maybe illegally, over. Maybe illegally raising some swine back there, a couple of hogs, maybe. Much to your
no,
neighbor's
just
chagrin.
My neighbor. those are just my neighbors. They get in my backyard sometimes.
Do you ever look at like a pesky raccoon or possum and just think, man, I might shoot that thing and cook it up? You ever think of that, or you just
sort of shoot them away? I don't eat rodents.
No rodents.
I'll shoot it just because it came on the property.
I see. Indeed. So, Kurt South
just to discharge around in the suburbs every once in a while makes me feel good.
Alive and free. Alive and free as a gun goes off in the night. Kurt South, 12-gauge. Well, listen, we told a story. Man, way back like podcast one. This is podcast 61. Am I right? Is that what that says over there?
God, that's about 60 too many.
Gracious.
Who listens to this crap?
We're so out of stuff. I told the story of when I came back from Nashville and met Kurt. I was playing Tuesdays at the Moon, right here in Fort Worth, right over there by TCU. Oh, just playing shows over there, the tip jar, you know, late nights. And there was this guy in the front row, you know, falling out of his chair, you know, who would just run to the bathroom every 5 minutes.
Pantless half the time.
Yeah, bought like $40 of merchandise at every show.
Turned around and sold it for a profit on the street.
That's right. And he was Kurt South. Well, that was the first Kurt South story of many. I got an email from a friend who was at a Nacogdoches show years ago. It was one of our first big out-of-town markets, P2 and the full band. So we get, I can't remember how this came up, but we decided to take Kurt South, my new buddy, at the Moon. I say, man, we're going to take Kurt to the Nacogdoches gig. We had a big show out there at the Annex, And I said, man, he can come sell the merch. He's a music guy. He's funny to have around. He's helpful. So
y'all made me open up that show too.
Did you open?
Yeah, that's why you took me, because this guy will do everything, including play a set for nothing.
Okay.
You give him $18 and a chicken fried steak.
That's
and
right.
Wash the van.
Indentured servitude, we call it. So that, but that leads us into the story of how this came to be. The Kurt South Nacogdoches tale. Which I was reminded of recently and was trying to remember it. And see if you can help me here, Sal. Yeah, so you go out there. It was me and Stolle and Lynch. Was it Lynch? Was it
no, yeah,
Shane?
Lynch was there. No, you,
me,
Stolle,
Jason Stolle on drums, Lynch, Ryan Lynch on bass, the old lineup.
And, Jordan Powell road managing and administering first aid.
Jordan Powell administering first aid. So I think, man, we'll get Kurt. I'll give Kurt, this guy, local guy, I'll get him some exposure out of town. I'll get him to get up there. Did you play the band, or was it just you?
No, it was just me, I think.
Played solo, opening up at the Annex. So South shows up. He talks the whole way there, 3 hours in the car. And we get there. Now, you had and you had to get back the next day. We were coming back early because you had a gig, some benefit.
I was playing a benefit like at a VFW hall in Cleburne or
something.
Yeah, something. Something.
For some poor guy that had some terrible tragedy, like he got run over or something like that. I can't remember. But Kurt, always there to help those in need.
OD'd on meth, something. I don't remember what it was.
Some South fan meeting a befitting end. So Kurt gets to the show. Oh, all the memories just came flooding back to me the other day.
See, I remember just bits and pieces of this. Your memory of it is much more acute than mine.
Well, Kurt, I didn't see Kurt play. He played the show. And then it was understood that you'd sort of hang around. I don't know, maybe help carry some gear or something. I don't know. Was that part of the deal? Maybe not.
Sure. I guess. I don't know.
Well, dude, we get inside the gig. Got a pretty good crowd that night, I remember. We had a pretty good crowd. Some action at the merch table. And the merch table was right at the... like right in front of the stage.
There's this little, I remember there's
like
a stairwell, set of stairs. Like
going
eight
to the stage,
stairs.
Like eight stairs going right down to the merch
and
table.
And this stage is like 4 feet high. It's a pretty high stage.
It is, yeah, pretty tall. So we play our show, yippee, it's great. And South has been at the bar. You've been back there at the bar with somebody.
I was over there with Jamie Talbert.
Oh, yes.
That was the guy who did me in that night.
Jamie Talbert. How you doing out there, Talbert?
Beaumont, Texas'
own. Texas' own Jamie Talbert. Singer-songwriter, P2 producee. One of the first records I ever produced that wasn't my own was Jamie Talbert's record. Got me and Stolle Lynch and Powell all played on it. Great stuff. Great time.
I did some very bad harmony vocals on that record.
That's right. You did. I forgot. Oh, so you knew Talbert. Was this after that?
Yeah.
It probably was. Probably all after that.
Well, No. That, all this happened before Talbert made the album.
Because that was
the first time I'd ever met Talbert.
I see.
And Jamie Talbert is this, knows how to have fun
about
as well as anyone else.
Indeed.
And I get done playing my set. I do remember this. I get done playing my set, and Talbert just comes up to me and just takes me under his wing.
Yeah.
And there's like this...
shows you the place.
There's like this back bar.
Yeah, there's like three bars in there.
He keeps taking me back. He's like, hey, let's do a shot. I'm buying. Well, he does this about 11 times.
He was driving a Hummer back then, a brand new Hummer.
And just next thing I know, I'm just obliterated beyond belief. I mean, just a drunken buffoon.
And suddenly, so here's where I enter the tale. Phil, remember me? It's my show. I'm trying to get on the stage, but I get in the club here. And there's just an electricity, a palpable energy that's just sort of rippling through the room. Who is this guy? Is he with Phil? Is he a friend of Phil? And there's just this rabble kind of back by the bar. There's Talbert. There's South. He's telling stories. He's standing up on chairs. And then I was like, yeah, Bruce Hornsby. Yeah, he's taking a leak right next to him. Whatever. He's telling the stories. The crowd's over there. Who is this guy? He's great. Call him a shot. South has got the show. He's got the whole crowd.
I will steal the party from you.
He steals the party.
I will steal the party.
So we go up there. We have to get up there and just... open with Maria or something, just to wrest control of the room, just to reclaim the show. So we do the best we can. We play a good show. Everything goes just quite well. South's out there working around. He kind of comes up to the front of the stage. He's throwing money at my feet. I just put the shot. And just You know, and the band's looking at me. Lynch is telling me to shake my head. Just like, who is that guy? Why is he here? Where'd you find him? I'm like, hey, he's all right. He's all right. Don't worry about him. He's going to help us load out. We're going to be glad he's here. So we get off the stage. So I'm standing a little bit later at the merch table there, right by the aforementioned flight of stairs that goes up to the 4-foot-high stage. And I'm sitting there with some fans, and we were selling some shirts, and Jordan Powell, and suddenly South just, I guess you were still there, Talbert. I don't know. He's still just hitting the booze back there.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Pretty hard. So we start moving. While this is all going on, there's a crowd of people at the bottom of this stairwell, right around the merch table. Am I right?
Yeah.
Me and Powell are sitting there. I'm signing some hats and things. And South, I see South struggling to get up the stairs. That amp. Start loading the stuff out of here. So he's up on the stage. And he's just running into stuff. And so I'm just signing my stuff. I'm like, South is just off his rocker. Well, all of a sudden, I look up, I hear this noise, this ruckus. And I just turn, and here comes, there's Kurt South just like 8 feet
mid-air.
Off the ground. Mid-air, holding a Fender Twin Reverb. Just in midair, and it's like
I holding 100 pounds of amplifier in midair.
Yeah,
just floating back to the earth.
Floating back to the earth. So I just push a couple of drunken sorority girls out of the way. Just all happening so slow. I'm just like, look, here comes South. He's just holding this twin, just goes crashing down. Just bam, bam, just the amp, and South is just splayed out on the floor. And he lands hard, just right at the foot of the stairs, right in front of me. You know, I've got a Sharpie in one hand. And South is now just parted this little group of people with his own falling body. He just splatters right in front of everybody. The amp just goes sliding across the floor. And I'm like, God, South, you all right? I'm like, God, you know. And then you're laying on your face. And I think you're like out cold for a second. Then you just roll over. You roll on your back. And just your face is just purple. Like you're just gasping for air. And then all of a sudden he just lets out the most blood-curdling scream. Just like I don't know what it was. Like a 12-year-old just getting her foot sawn off or something. Awful. It was just this shrill, just this.
See, this is where I lose my recollection.
Powell is down there just applying pressure. And it looks like there's something wrong. You're holding your ankle.
I broke my ankle.
Yeah.
I just split my ankle in half.
It's just this compound fracture almost.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was through the skin, but it was just some sort of just a broken. So he's on the ground. I'm just saying, thanks for coming to the show. Now I've got South laid out, just his guts all over the floor, screaming bloody murder. And I'm just looking at Powell. I'm just like, just get him out of here. Just drag him off to the side. So Powell just kind of grabs your clothes. He's just going to, he just kind of slides you across, just at least out of the way of everybody. I'm mortified now. I'm like, oh my gosh, now he's broken his leg or something.
Lawsuit.
Stalin and Lynch just look at me, just shaking their head. Just it only gets worse from here. And sure enough, so we finally load out. You're over there. You got your foot like in the ice behind the bar, like in the where the beer is. Just like and dude, it is your whole leg is like swollen black and blue and green.
Yeah. It was and you remember later in the hotel room in like the La Quinta or something.
Yeah, we get back to the hotel, yeah.
You and Pal started administering just all kinds of aid. Y'all have me lie down on the bed, elevate my ankle.
Right.
You're putting ice on
there.
We
didn't know it was broken. We thought maybe it was just a bit bad sprain, right?
Yeah, it's bad to this day.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah, to this day, my right ankle is just no good for anything.
Oh, man. Owe it all to Nacogdoches.
You know what?
And your own drunkenness.
Well, yeah, there's that. The one and only time I've ever played Nacogdoches, that is, I never went back.
That's it? Really?
Never.
Wow.
And
you left a mark that night.
Well, I mean, nothing else I can do. How do you carry a wound for that?
You carry a wound today, a limp. It's like you're a veteran of like, you know, the Battle of Bunker Hill or something.
I'm a veteran of some wars.
Jeez. My amp was never the same either, I don't think. Yeah, so we're in the hotel now, and I've just got like South, you know, soiled tube sock, and I'm wrapping it around his ankle, and I'm just applying. I'm trying to squeeze it. We're tightening as hard as we can just to keep that swelling down. We got ice on there. We got heat on there. You're still drinking, just like, my ankle, it goes out occasionally. And the funny thing was, So we get through the night, and the next day you've got to play this gig.
Yeah.
And you brought, I think, a small, like a little head and a speaker and like a mic stand, because you're...
Yeah.
You go, man, I'll just bring my guitar.
See, this part I really don't remember.
I remember this. This is the most vivid of all, because it just painted the picture. It you know, kind of paved the way for the future of the guy in the robe with the shotgun and the Carlo Rossi.
Yeah.
And so we go, we're driving back to Fort Worth. South goes, man, I got to get to my gig down here. I'm like, you got somebody? He goes, but I do not own a vehicle. I will not be charged for registration fee. Yeah, I don't know, you give us some deal why you don't have a car or something. I'm like, dude, I can't take you all the way to Cleveland. Come on. So he gets on the phone and goes, oh, I'll get one of the guys from the gig to come up to 35 and just meet me on the highway. I'm like, are you sure? He goes, guys, let me out right here. So we pull over on the shoulder of 35.
Oh, I remember
busy.
This
it's like
now.
104 degrees.
I remember. Yeah, okay. It's starting to come back.
South goes, I'll need to unload my equipment before I depart. You know, so he goes back here, and dude, he can hardly walk. I mean, he can hardly move. Got to be hungover as well. And so you go out in the back, you get your guitar in one hand, this mic stand in one hand, and then you have like a speaker that's like a all-in-one speaker deal. You play everything into, like, you know, like
there's an amp of some
deal,
sort,
an
I guess.
Amp of some kind.
I don't remember.
And you're just on the side of 35, just like in walking. Tattered clothing. And so I'm just like, dude, yeah, are you sure they're coming out here?
They'll be here momentarily.
You know, just they have been alerted to my presence, whatever. So I'm like, all right. So we just shut the door. We pull off, and I'm just in a concerned whore. I just kind of look in the rearview mirror, and there I see South. He's just leaning. He's got all his weight. He's like, he has lengthened this microphone stand to use it like a crutch. Like he'd raised it and kind of had it to where he could hold it, kind of like Moses in the desert. You know, like in the Ten Commandments. He had this this thing, and he got this guitar in one hand and just your scepter in the other, and you're just dragging, and you're kind of kicking this, you're kind of nudging this speaker, just going down the highway. And I'm just looking in the rearview mirror. I'm like, man, that is just a sight you don't see every day. People are gonna be driving by and just looking at you, just going, what happened to that guy? What is the? I mean, it looks like something out of like an apocalyptic film or something, you know?
It was right out of the road.
Like the road.
McCarthy.
I was thinking, yeah, or like El Mariachi, you know, or something. Just like, he's got a guitar and he looked like he's been shot or something. You just dragging down the... And then I think weeks later, I said, man, how'd the gig go? You're like,
tragically, the person in question had expired upon arrival. Therefore, the show is not commenced. I said hello and paid my condolences, made it back to my house.
You know, I was just like,
it didn't even, you didn't, the gig didn't
no,
come
No, what
off?
Happened at or that something. Point was a friend of mine, it might have been the guy I lived with at the time.
Yeah.
And I had this old Nissan Pathfinder.
Yeah.
And he drove my vehicle down there,
mm-hmm.
met me there, and we ran out of gas.
Yeah. It was
in the middle of nowhere.
Oh,
on the way to this gig, so.
Oh, no.
But we're close enough to our destination that I feel like, man, I can't just not show up.
Yeah.
So I walk the rest of the way while my buddy waits there and tries to get gas. And I go in there and offer my condolences and leave.
Oh, it was just,
walk back.
It was just a disaster story of just whatever could go wrong did go wrong. And he carries the wounds to this day.
I do.
Kurt South, the greatest road manager, a roadie. One chance, he just went airborne and shattered your life for the rest of your life.
I did.
Walks with a permanent limp. Nacogdoches, Texas. Write it down. You heard it here. Well, that concludes this segment, and we had to get that story out there. Floated just so I can go back. I can go back and listen to it occasionally.
How did
there
that not
for the
come
record.
Out until now?
You hear about like the Eisenhower tapes, like the interview of Eisenhower. People go back and listen to it. This is what this podcast is going to be for me. When I'm 85, I'm going to go back and I'm going to, because this is the only way I remember all this stuff.
Ugh.
Well, stay tuned in our next segment. We're going to talk. We got a lot of feedback on that Tiger Woods story we did. Golf.
Uh-oh.
Where are the drunk golfers with the scotch? It's no fun anymore. Has baseball joined golf's ranks?
Yes.
As well as tennis?
All right.
We'll talk more later. fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here, enlightening your musical life on the one and only P2 Podcast. The other half of the didactic duo is here. He is Kurt South.
Hello, hello.
Recounting his tragic fall at Nacogdoches years ago as he tried his best to get drunk and be a road manager at a Phil Pritchett and the Full Band show, which went tragically awry. He bears the wounds to this day. He walks with a limp. Every time it rains, the ankle acts up. Is that right?
It does. It does. I've got my right ankle and my right wrist both,
yeah,
both
permanently
broken.
At gigs?
No.
What happened to the wrist?
The wrist, I first injured it.
Now, wait a minute. This is a family show. Okay?
Yeah. No. It wasn't.
All right.
No, the wrist. I was playing, when I was going to TCU, we played pickup basketball in the RIC.
Yeah.
The recreation center.
Sure.
Student activity center.
Yeah, right.
And I was in this rather heated pickup game. I got angry at one point and just punched a wall.
Oh, no.
Just, yeah.
A la Tom Petty. He did that as well.
Yeah. Just, I don't know. Hard foul. Somebody fouled me hard.
Missed
a
shot.
And I just lay into the wall. And this was like around November this happens. Well, a couple weeks later, I go to one of my best friend's house to see his parents every Thanksgiving, and he lives in rural southwest Missouri, and his family, they're cattle ranchers.
Yeah.
And one morning, his dad wakes us up because we had stumbled in at like 4 o'clock, 4 a.m., just hammered. I remember I threw up in their kitchen or something. I don't know.
How come I didn't hear of any of this? But tell me, if I'd known any stories, I wouldn't ask you to come road manager.
So at this point, when I punched the wall in the basketball game, I hurt the wrist pretty bad.
Okay,
kind of a strain. Yeah,
sprain a couple
type
weeks.
Deal.
Kind of, yeah, well, I'll be all right.
So like 8 o'clock the next morning, his dad comes in and, all right, boys, y'all get up,
get to work.
Y'all had a lot of fun last night. I need y'all to go. And this was a whole joke on his dad's part. His
dad
had this one crazy mother cow that had its calf, and the calf needed to be castrated, needed to be given its shots.
And he knew you were the guy to do it.
He knew I was the guy to do it, but he also knew it was a joke amongst the other ranch hands up there that no one wanted to mess with this cow because couldn't get the calf away from the cow.
Just kick you in the
head. Like the cow had run down a horse and knocked a guy off.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, she was crazy. So he sends Tate and I, the great Tate Thorson.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for listening, Tate.
Sends us out to the corral where this cow and calf are.
Yeah.
His dad just goes, all right, boys, have at it. And it's a 6-foot-high corral fence.
Yeah.
So Tate and I go in there. I think one of us has a rope.
Yeah.
We're going to show this cow how it's done.
That's right.
And just at some point, the cow decides to come after me. And we both go running for the fence. I grab the top bar of the fence, just do a pull-up, you know.
Yeah.
Throw myself end over end.
Yeah.
And I land on the other side on that right wrist.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just goes.
Oh, yeah. Probably maybe weakened from punching the wall.
Yeah.
Just,
and it just goes.
Yeah.
And
another, just like the you
it's not
screaming
right
Bloody
day.
Merly.
Yeah.
Screaming Bloody Merly.
Bloody Merly.
This time, this time in a bunch of cow excrement.
Yeah.
God, you always wind up on the floor screaming in agony. How does that always happen to you?
I haven't had a major injury since then, though.
Okay.
Thank goodness. Yeah.
Thank goodness.
So that's where the wrist went, folks, but I can still beat you in tennis.
Well, speaking of tennis, got a lot of feedback on our sports talk last week. A couple weeks ago, talking about Tiger. Oh, poor Tiger. Oh, man, we're all so sad. He's got this disease, Kurt. Have you heard about this?
A disease called humping.
Yeah, you just want to go out and just get with women and stuff. Have you heard about this?
Yeah,
it's an affliction, not very common.
Apparently, he's the only one with genitalia.
They've got
attracted to women.
They've got facilities built now to try and deal with this problem. Evidently, this is something that some guys suffer from.
Just some guys find women attractive and want to touch them. Just some guys. It's not all of them.
But anyway, so we talked about Tiger and got some feedback on that. You know, surprised Kurt wasn't a Tiger fan, you know. But we were talking about the PGA Tour, how You used to have all these colorful characters, all the drunk guys.
You know what PGA stands for?
I don't. Hold on. This is a family show.
Yeah, I know. I'll tell you.
What
I'll,
is it?
I'll tell you off. No, so, I can't.
But you know, I got an email from a guy, Chris in Austin, saying, man, you can almost apply. You know, a lot of these PGA Tour guys, that they're all sponsored now. There's so much money in it, even when you're not winning golf tournaments. See, back in the day, you either won, or if you missed the cut, you didn't get paid. So you might as well just stay around and get drunk for the weekend, right?
Right.
Or something.
Right,
I mean, right? There wasn't anybody to piss
There's
off.
There's always waitresses in the 19th hole
so,
pick up.
And there wasn't a whole lot. Man, I'm going to lose my, what? You didn't lose any? I mean, it wasn't until Fuzzy Zeller said the thing about, you know, whatever. He made the racially insensitive remark about
fried
Tiger.
Chicken and collard greens or something.
He had a Target sponsorship. He lost the Target sponsorship. But back in like the 70s, man, no one had sponsorships. Not really. I mean, a few, maybe. And man, baseball starts. This guy said a lot of sports, like even baseball, he pointed out in his email that, you know, the old baseball guys would just have more fun. They didn't get paid that much.
Hello, Charlie Huff.
Yeah, dude.
Just smoking in the bullpen.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen the? I don't know if you can go on YouTube and find this, but there, years and years ago, Charlie Huff was a
pitcher, knuckleballer for the Rangers.
Pitched
till he was like 53.
Yeah. Smoked. If he wasn't on the mound pitching, he was smoking.
Smoking in the dugout, sure.
But there was, it was after a game. They were in the Rangers locker room. Charlie Huff is on an exercise bike.
Yeah.
And they're coming up, the press is coming up to get a word from him. And he's just kind of pedaling there, very half-assed. And in one hand, he's just got a tumbler of scotch that he is drinking while on the exercise bike. And they're like, Charlie, the knuckleball just not working today? And he just takes a drink and goes, knuckleball never works. Never. Never.
Yeah, just
that's why they got me on this bike, getting me back in shape, I guess.
Yeah, he's also got a cigarette. He's on the bike. On the bike.
Yeah. Where are those guys?
Well,
where are those
guys?
You know, guys?
I guess you'd argue they just wouldn't have what it took to even stay out there today. You know, I guess that's you got to be in superhuman shape or something to even compete. But the point was made by this guy that just you were. I remember famously there's footage out there of the 70s, I don't know, 80s Baltimore Orioles during a rain delay. You had the famous catcher Rick Dempsey.
Yeah.
Their foot all of a sudden just comes running out of the dugout with a backwards hat on and a big pad under his shirt, and he just belly flops and just does a slip and slide
all the way across
the
tarp.
The diamond. He starts running the bases, and there's a few fans in the just getting soaked, waiting for the rain, and they're just cheering him on. They're just, go, go. And he just runs. He just slides in a second. But man, today. I mean, can you imagine just Mark Teixeira getting out there and doing that during a Yankees rain delay?
Don't get me started on him.
Okay, well, listen, I'm talking about one of these.
One of these
roid dudes out there. The point is they have so much to lose. They're getting paid so much money, and it's an individual sport like golf, baseball. Even though it is a team, it's an individual deal, man. Your own stats and everything. And you know, rightly so. These guys, they have so much to lose. They're sponsored by Gillette. They're sponsored by this guy and this guy. They don't want to get tagged as. Oh, that guy's a buffoon. You know, then when your name comes up in free agency, like he just screws around all the time. You know what I'm saying? You have too much to lose, so guys don't do anything. And the PGA Tour is kind of the same thing. They all got their sponsors on their hat and stuff, and so you're not going to just make some sort of offhanded remark. You know what I'm saying? You just got too much to lose. I guess that's the problem. Is it just money, corporate sponsorship ruins everything?
Well, everybody's got to act like they're in a boardroom nowadays. And you know, I mentioned earlier. Tennis is that way. Now, I used to.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I love tennis.
Well, those guys are all sponsored, heavily sponsored.
Yeah, but now you've just got Andy Roddick. He's just good looking and really nice.
Federer.
And Federer.
Sampras was like that. Very quiet, very soft-spoken.
Yeah, man, when I was growing up, you had a Von Lindell and Jimmy Connors and McEnroe and Bjorn Borg and Becker and, you know, even a.
I think
what's
there's
old
something to that,
Method.
Ilie Nastasi?
No, Andre Agassi.
Oh, yeah.
That guy walks out there. He has the stones to wear a mullet that would embarrass anybody from Alabama in the 70s.
But ironically, he was sponsored because of his image. You know, that whole Canon deal.
The Canon deal.
And
image is everything.
Image is everything. And it used to be, yeah, I don't know, man. It seems like some of the flavor's gone out of the sports a little bit because of the money. They don't want to get fined. They don't want to draw any undue attention to themselves.
Yeah.
You think that's just it's as simple as that?
I think it's just as simple as that. It's just
some backup catcher for the Orioles in the 70s. He might be making $55,000 a year. So hell, if he wants to get out there and run the bases during a rain delay. Just like, I don't know. Wasn't there that much difference between that and playing in AAA? And no one was going to fire him. I mean, it's just like, I don't know. Right.
No, I think it is as simple as that. I think and everything now is so media oriented and media driven.
Yeah.
Anything you do, say, whatever, is going to be seen by the world if they want to see it.
And right. Right.
So everybody's always in this very censored.
What's everybody going to think? Yeah, I don't want to.
Yeah, and everybody's always in spin and PR mode. Everything right, right. is, you know, if I say this, will people think? You know, and it's just. You know, that's one of the downsides, I think, to the kind of world we live in now where everything is just, you know. I mean, Jerry Jones can't get drunk in a bar and talk about his own team without everybody watching it.
Yeah, and if you're having some form, I mean, he's just being himself. That's how he always is. That's what he is.
Yeah, I mean, but no, Jerry. Well, all right, newsflash. Every owner in the NFL is somewhere right now with a 2-liter of scotch talking like that.
South just longs for the world to pick up a tumbler of scotch. That's just what you're always. That's really
what
you want.
That's what they're doing.
Huh?
It's just what's going on. People are like, oh, Jerry Jones, you see that footage? How scandalous. Ugh. Yeah, I don't know. How about I just put a camera on you Friday night when you're over at the poorhouse or wherever
you
go and get your thing on and,
and
play it back for the world and people realize what a D-bag you are.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Man, it's interesting, dude. I sports is it's an odd deal, man. You just got to be geared to be in it now somehow. And from a young age, your coach not only had to play, but just had to act. You know, like, look, you know, you don't want to be a bad this or that teammate or something.
Yeah.
And I think it just does take some of the personality out of the game. Those guys on base, old ball players, and Billy Martins and whoever else, and John Kruk. Guys like that are just
John Kruk, Dykstra. Lenny Dykstra.
You know, maybe that old Phillies team. Was that the Mitch Williams Phillies?
Yeah.
They
were awesome.
Dude, but they had some character, man.
Yeah.
Those guys.
No doubt they did.
And I don't know. You don't have.
Now they're just a bunch of Mark Teixeiras. They're all little corporate entities unto themselves.
That's right, yeah.
And, you know, Teixeira could not care less what team he's on. He just cares about what Mark Teixeira Incorporated is doing.
He's in his own business.
Yeah. You know, he's just, they're all just kind of these robotic, self-absorbed jerks now.
and they always say the baseball players, exceptionally so.
Yeah.
The sports writers. I remember seeing polls through the years, like, who are the, as a sport, who are the just kind of the jerkiest guys? They always said golfers were the nicest. And this was maybe years ago, just talking to Fuzzy and Raymond Floyd in the bar after the game. They said, man, golfers are always the coolest. Jack Nicklaus. They're always just very polite. Tom Watson.
Fuzzy Zeller, greatest athlete ever.
Yeah, there you go.
Mark it down. Love that guy.
You think he's ever been on an exercise bike with a Marlboro Red and
he's had a Marlboro and he's had a cocktail,
of tequila.
But never has he even considered getting on a piece of exercise equipment.
Yeah, good. Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah.
We're talking about just guys. You know how the golfers were always very, very affable, very, very charming, very easygoing. Greg Norman, you know, always good for an interview. But yeah, just traditionally, the baseball players were always just sort of the most soft-spoken, smug, cocky. I mean, think of the interviews you've seen with, like, Roger Clemens or Barry Bonds. Or you're just kind of like, God. Now, there's some exceptions, okay? I mean, there's George Brett's out there, nice guys. But, George Brett,
you brought up a great one. Remember when he hits the home run and they take it away?
The Pine Tar
on the bat. And Brett just
has the huge chew. Always just had the gigantic chaw in his mouth.
Yeah, and
man.
Brett just goes out there ready
play
to
ball.
Whip anybody. I mean, just tears after him.
Brett. Oh, those were the good old days, man.
They were the good old days.
Now they're just shuffling around guys every year, different guys on the team.
But, you look at even a guy who's not a professional yet. Well, he is now after he fell way in the draft.
Uh-oh.
Colt McCoy,
uh-oh.
Hello,
oh, no.
Give us a call. You can tell by watching a guy like Colt McCoy that he's been groomed for the last 10 years
on
how to talk to the media, how to do this, do that.
Yeah.
And
he's the whole package, you know.
And, man, you're just sitting there when every time he seems like a nice enough guy.
Sure.
But man, you just hear him talking like, "Man, it comes across so phony. I just don't."
Well, he's got to be a little more loose than that somewhere, doesn't he? God,
yeah, I just want to punch myself in the gut when I watch some of these guys talk because it's just, you know, okay,
it's okay
you're
about,
just
yeah,
yeah, you're just you've been programmed.
Where's Joe Willie Namath when you need him?
Yeah, where's Joe? Oh yeah,
talk Broadway
to me about Broadway Joe.
Broadway Joe. That's right.
Just hanging out with gangsters, owning his own clubs up there, and just being ridiculous all the time.
So that'd be your appetite for that'd be your all sports team quarterback, Joe Namath. You're the owner of the franchise.
He might be.
You get a couple good seasons out.
Or Terry Bradshaw.
Yeah, well, he's a character.
Bradshaw was on Leno last night.
Oh, was he really?
It was great, man. Yeah. I used to run a feed business.
Yeah.
And Bradshaw was one of our biggest customers. He owns a lot of horses and stuff.
Yeah.
And Bradshaw would just come into the feed warehouse and just hang out.
Yeah.
He would just stand there and talk. But he'd get to the point and he would just yat your ear off.
Yeah, he talked to a post.
Can I get this guy to go? I'd be like, hey, Terry, next week I'm coming back. I'm bringing lunch. What do y'all like? Y'all like barbecue? There's a barbecue place. All right, I'm bringing you. All right, thanks, man. Next time he'd show up with a rack of ribs and a case of beer, you know.
Nice.
But yeah, Bradshaw might be on there.
We need to get Bradshaw on the podcast. Maybe start bringing some sports figures,
we
man.
We could get Bradshaw. Bradshaw would come in here.
You think so?
Yeah, Bradshaw would come on. Who wouldn't come on with us?
Dude, they would.
We get press agents all day long wanting to get their clients on the podcast.
Had a call from someone from Lewis Gossett Jr.'s camp the other day.
Oh,
that'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
That would be great.
He couldn't do it, though. He's doing a speech for an event here in town. And they were hoping the show was like played live where he'd be promoting the event. And I said, actually taped and it's played, you know, late. I mean, it wouldn't be time sensitive, you know, enough for what they were looking for.
Nolan Ryan.
Nice guy. Yeah, you think we'd get him?
Come on here and talk about the snow monkeys.
The snow monkeys. Sitting here making me a mess of dove eggs and some snake bacon.
Snake bacon.
Oh, hats off to the friends of the ticket there for the Nolan impression here in Dallas, Texas. Well, we're going to get into the vault section here. Oh, man, you're always learning something new in this business. I came on as a songwriter. I had to learn to write songs, get a little better at that. I had to learn to perform, get a little better at that. Next thing I know, I'm out of money. Dead broke, you see. Had to learn how to make my own records, how to record songs on the computer, Phil. So what do, man? I learned how to record a little bit. So, man, you start getting into these producers. You hear about me talk about Daniel Lanois. One of the other big guys out there is our old friend Robert John, quote, Mutt, end quote, Lang. Mutt Lang. Some people are like, yeah, Mutt Lang. How do I know that name? We're going to talk about all things Mutt Lang in the framework of one of the greatest rock and roll records ever made. Now, some people would say he's made other great rock and roll records for this band and other bands. But this is my favorite, The Vault, Mutt Lang, Highway to Hell, next. Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Did you know the full band is just waiting to come play a show for you? Whether you own a bar or run a festival, if you're just having a get-together at the house or out on the ranch, you think, man, it'd be awesome if Phil and the guys could show up and just rock this thing forevermore. We do it all the time. Call me, 817-733-5256. I'll tell you how to make it happen. We'd love it. Kurt South is here, the other half of the Didactic Duo, as someone up there in Missouri dubbed us. We appreciate that very much. Kurt South, how you doing, my friend?
Good, good. Ready for the vault.
For the vault.
The vault.
You know, we do artists in the vault. We do the occasional movie, the occasional book. Man, you know what? Recently, I have just been in this world of the niche, of the successful band that sold 9,000 albums. of Yippee, we sold out a club for 300 people. All big accomplishments. Hard to do these days. I've been obsessed. I've been going back and just reading the things that bound all of society together. I rented Lawrence of Arabia. Kind of a hard movie to watch, but it was epic in scope.
Playboy subscription?
No. It is a family show. Oh. What are you doing? Lawrence of Arabia. I read Moby Dick. Oh, man. Whew, that's not for the faint of heart.
No.
Long, arduous.
Long,
all about,
hard read.
All about whaling, what kind of hooks they're using, how to skin a whale, all kinds of interesting. Pretty much an encyclopedia on whaling. But interesting. Moby Dick. I'm reading the Lewis and Clark book I mentioned. Undaunted Courage with the Lewis and Clark Expedition. Just epic, man. Huge, epic. So I wanted to get into the vault here with an epic record. An epic producer. Robert John. You know him as Mutt Lang or Mr. Shania Twain until very recently. Oh, he's so much more than that. I hate when Shania Twain gets brought up with Mutt Lang. He was such an institution, such a legend before she came into the picture, for crying out loud.
Well, he gave her a career.
Man, that's kind of one of the things with
a lot of
successful women singers are married to producers. So a lot of the time, just about all of
is that
them,
how you met your wife? She came in to do a record,
yeah, right? No, absolutely not. We met elsewhere, my friend. Well, Robert John Mutt Lang. What's so great about Mutt Lang in this modern day of 100% exposure. In this modern day of everybody tweeting about what they're doing all the time and Facebooking and updating pictures and here's my kids and here's what I'm doing now and TMZ, no one knows anything about Mutt Lang. He gives no interviews. There's not one thing on YouTube if you do an interview Mutt Lang. Or there's nothing. He doesn't talk to anyone. All he does is go in there and make records occasionally with bands.
In his chateau in Switzerland.
Chateau in Switzerland. Very mysterious. He's like a part, I was reading, he's a part of some kind of order. I think it's maybe a Buddhist-based order of discipline of some sort. You know, you don't drink, you don't smoke, you don't, you're really at peace, you're very centered. You know what I mean? Like, he's one of these kinds of guys. I mean, he's almost one of these... You know, he has a monkish...
He has a Zen-like quality to him.
Mutt Lang, yes. Great songwriter, producer, singer. He could do it all and did it all for a long time. Started producing, really, in the mid-70s. There's old stories of him hooking up with, you know, Huey Lewis and his old band. Stuff like that.
Clover.
Yeah, Clover, that's right. I wouldn't have got that. But, man... I think, if I'm not mistaken, of course he produced Back in Black. Didn't even use a click track, for crying out loud, you know.
Who needs it?
So, but before Back in Black, man, Back in Black was, of course, the first AC/DC record with Brian Johnson on lead vocal. But he had produced the great Highway to Hell. Everyone talks about Back in Black. It's great. I love it. Man, I just love Bon Scott's voice so much more than Brian Johnson's.
Mm-hmm.
I just do. And I like Back in Black. But I don't like a whole lot after Back in Black. I don't.
Nah.
AC/DC. But I love Dirty Deeds. I love, Power It. Or what's the other big one? All those crazy AC/DC albums. High Voltage and Highway to Hell. So this is Highway to Hell, man. Is just, I mean, are there more iconic in its simplicity, man? But why do we still listen to it today? Highway to Hell. Sounds as good as it ever did.
They wrote one song and recorded it 200 times over.
Yeah, is that really how they made it? I don't know a whole lot about it.
Well, I mean, if you look at AC/DC, man, every song is just kind of the same.
Yeah.
But they're...
It's rhythm and blues, man. I mean, that's kind of what it really is. Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to explain the appeal, man. It's primitive. And it's just...
Just testosterone-fueled rock and roll. Is that what it is? I mean, it's just... Something when you're 14, 15 years old, you throw on AC/DC.
Adolescent bliss.
It really is, man. Better than maybe any other band has done it. It doesn't really appeal. I get a lot of flack sometimes for my AC/DC passion. People are like, I stink, you know. I went and saw them in Nashville when I was living up there. I went to the show with Matty Adams, everyone's favorite entertainment lawyer. He's done a lot of work for you, hasn't he, Matty?
He's we've had some business dealings.
Had some run-ins.
Have yet to go awry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know who else went to that concert with me? Jim Beavers. And George Dukas. You know who George Dukas is?
Dukas?
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, absolutely. I got an old Dukas record.
Yeah, Lipstick Promises. Yeah, it's a big hit.
And those lipstick promises. Every single word you said. Every drop-dead shade of red.
That's big hits, man.
He co-wrote a couple new Randy Rogers songs.
Yeah, he writes. He's still up there. He writes a lot. He's a good friend of Jim's. I didn't know him very well. But he was in our group. So we went to AC/DC. You know, it was corny as heck, man. I mean, I was up there. I was a little past it, you know. But it was, you know, they had the bell out there.
For those about bells, to roll out.
Oh, they rolled out the cannons. Oh, yeah. Fire. Pff. Angus pulled his pants down, the whole deal. But, man.
Sounds like a Phil Pritchett show lately.
Yeah, right. But Phil Pritchett, that's a Kurt South show. That's Kurt South, but he's not even doing a show. He was taking off his pants, throwing up on the table. Was that during the gig? No, that was just you know, at the party.
That was before at the Golden Corral before the show.
The one out by the mall. But, man, what intrigues me about Mutt Lange is really, of course, is the great stuff he did. Now, he made his huge bukus of money with Shania and, of course, Def Leppard, man. All those wacky backward drums things and, you know, Pour Some Sugar on Me. Was Pyromania his, too?
Yeah.
Or did he do Hysteria? I
know he did Hysteria, but I thought he did Pyromania, Hysteria, and whatever the one after that was.
Yeah, maybe so. Animal.
Animal,
I think he did
a
lot of stuff, yeah. So he did, man, that he made a lot of money. And you know what? I wasn't a big fan of those albums as much. I mean, I'd kind of grown up, but I was a little older, you know? But, man, the AC/DC was right in the wheelhouse, man. And, dude, sometimes nothing else will do. Just driving down the road.
Yeah.
Or just in your house by yourself, and you just put it on. And that lick comes on. I love Shot Down in Flames is just one of my favorite on this one, dude. You know? Oh man. I love just, if you listen real carefully, put headphones on, put those earbuds, stuff those earbuds way down in your ears. And man, like at the opening, when he plays Highway to Hell, or the beginning of Shot Down in Flames, you just have that just after that chord fades, you just hear kind of the room. And you can hear guys moving around and coughing and stuff. It's just like you can just sense the room about to explode. I mean, you know what I mean? It's not like it's not all gated where it's just nah, 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 and it's just absolutely dead quiet. There's so much life in it, man. There's so much just breezing, fuzzy life, even in the spaces on this album.
Yeah.
That might sounds weird to say, but that's what I always love about it, you know?
Just, hey, one day.
And the drums just kick in.
The drums are the same riff.
Oh. He never does a fill. He never does a fancy little. Nope. It doesn't really hit cymbals very much or toms. Rudd.
I just love.
What he got on there? Kurt's got the album artwork over there.
Just AC/DC is the one band
that
will write and record and release a song called Beating Around the Bush.
Yeah.
And if you want blood, you've got it. There's just,
if you want blood,
Love Hungry Man, Night Prowler. I mean, this is
the girls got rhythm.
And look at the cover. Look at what we're dealing with on the cover. It's kind of it's just a picture, and Angus is at the very front, sneering at the camera
with his devil horns.
With devil horns on,
and a devil's
holding
tail.
A devil's tail.
Yeah.
And the rest of them look like they don't even know they're being photographed.
That's right.
It's just awesome. Just goes to show you, all you guys who heavily stage your shots, it's unnecessary.
Right. Unnecessary.
Just put on some double
horns. You wouldn't call that, you wouldn't say that's staged?
No, they probably stand around looking like that all the time.
All the time, that's right.
Yeah.
You know, I always wondered how into all that stuff those guys were. How much of it was just sort of, hey, let's just have fun, it's kind of an act. It had to be. It's all an act. I mean,
it's all an
not
act.
That they're not serious about the music, but they're having fun with their image, wouldn't you say?
How could you not have fun when you're wearing short pants and a blue blazer and a tie?
What about, so you think, what about Ozzy back when we talked on a previous podcast? It made the top 10. Talking about Ozzy Osbourne holding the dove in one hand, a sandwich in the other, and the puffy shirt, you know, with the blood coming out of his mouth, or something, you know, something horrible and silly. Oh, man.
That's awesome.
You know, the great, something I really have a passion for is the great, do they still make these movies? I watch no TV now. I watch TV, I've written it off. But man, for a while there, VH1, they made the behind the scenes, behind the music things. Mm-hmm. And they kind of ran out of people. Everybody did one, right? Then they started making the films, VH1 mm-hmm. films. And man, I watched the VH1 films with great love. They did the Meatloaf one. Did you see the uh-huh. Meatloaf? Just loaf, just in a Lazy Boy. He just can't sing anymore. The bills are piled up. He's just setting fire to the bills in the middle of his mansion. Then he makes Bat Out of Hell too, and comes back, and you know, his wife just, we need some money, huh? Just, oh, I can't sing. What am I supposed to do? Just, you know, throwing a chair through a window, you know, whatever. Just Meatloaf just behind the. There's a great scene in the Meatloaf movie where he's trying out. He's auditioning for a record deal. Did you see it?
Yeah, I saw it. Yeah,
where his buddy's wearing the black gloves and all the leather. Wasn't that guy's name Jim, the genius piano player? Wrote all that crap, all that Rocky Horror Picture Show style stuff.
Yeah.
And Meatloaf is in there, and they go in there. And it's all these executives for like Capitol or whoever sitting there, and they go in there and audition. They just play this like 14-minute song about, you know, sacrificing a virgin on a stone or something.
Yeah.
And the guy just stands up, and looks at him, and just goes, guys, what is this? Is this a joke? They're just like, no, this is our music, man. He just looks at him and goes, do you guys even listen to the radio? Like, why would you even think this was a good idea? Of course, they were dejected. Of course, they win us all over. They win us all over, Meatloaf, with his anthemic Paradise by the Dashboard Light, etc. But, man, the other great movie I remember seeing was... Hysteria, the Def Leppard story.
Yeah, that was a great
one. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Now, they got a lot of storylines there. The tragic death of Steve Clark, the guitar player, the Rick Allen losing his arm in the car wreck.
And still playing drums.
And then who walks in at the pivotal moment where they can't get they're in the studio, just go, no, man, we can't do it like we do, man. What are you doing? Just smash the guitar. Nothing's going right. Who walks in?
Robert Mutt Lange.
Robert John Mutt Lange, portrayed by an aging yet still... acting stellar Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah.
How about that? Huh?
Anthony Michael Hall.
He's just got the frayed hair. It's awesome, dude. And he comes in here and just takes over the session. He's just hunched over the Neve console. You know? The guy's just playing the guitar part. And he's just like, how's that? He's just like, why don't you give me, do it again? You know, he makes him do it again. He layers it all up, plays it back for him. I can't believe how great it sounds, you know? It's pretty funny, dude.
That's awesome.
Guilty Pleasure, the biopic film. A big Guilty Pleasure. Another great one to check out. I can't remember the name of it. Starring Chad Lowe.
Which one is this?
As John Denver. Did you see that one?
Oh, I did see that one. Yeah.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Shocking.
He was pretty out of control.
Dude, there's just some scene in there. I'm just thinking, man, the John Denver story. Tonight on CBS. They got some, you know, some preview of him just like walking through a mountain stream with his big hat on, just golden hair with sunglasses, with his little round glasses. Just sunshine on my shoulder makes me happy. I'm like, man, I love John Denver. I'll watch this movie. Well, in the middle of this movie, he rises to fame. He writes Leaving on a Jet Plane for Peter, Paul, and Mary as a young man. He gets the glasses, the big bowl haircut. He gets married, moves to Aspen, builds this nice house. Then what? Then you know the rest of the story. What happens to all these guys?
He goes nuts.
Well, he just starts doing cocaine
and partying.
Gets on the cocaine. There's just finally some scene where
the Peruvian angel dust.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some scene where just Denver's just running through the house with a chainsaw, and he just goes, "Yeah, you like this bed? You like this bed?" She's like, "No, no." And just Denver, dude. He just chainsaws this bed in half. Just feathers and stuffing and wood chips. He's just like, his eyes are just bulged out of his head.
Who
just
here purple. Hasn't just, done
he's
that
just going just,
once?
Just, I just saw his wife screaming in the corner. God, it's horrible. I'm just like, God, what is going on?
Sounds like Tuesday.
Hell yeah, right. Oh, the Kurt South story. Forget the Kurt South movie. There's no movie for the Kurt South movie. This is the Kurt South miniseries. Much like the John Adams miniseries.
Yeah.
The only people
eight parts.
And it couldn't be on regular TV. It'd be too risque. You'd have to be on like HBO.
No, it could be on ABC.
No, come on. No. Come on. What are they going to do with all the words, all the sordid details? So, man, check out Hysteria. I'm not advocating. I'm suggesting it like maybe I'd suggest you go watch Point Break.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite movies of all
time.
Bad movies of all time, you know.
Just go look up Mutt Lange and look
Robert
at all the
John
stuff that
Mutt
he has
Lange.
Produced. And what's so great about him is that no one knows anything about him.
That's right. It's just such a mystery.
Except his work.
It's a mystery, yeah.
Yeah. And the fact he was married to Shania. And apparently took a liking to some other female.
One of the nannies or something? I don't know. That can't be true, huh?
Handled up on her.
He just let go of his Buddhist beliefs on that. Or is that? Or do they not believe that? I don't know. Maybe
well, nah, I mean, I think it's pretty evident he did it.
Yeah. But Tiger, what's up with the Buddhists, man? They just got that. They got the wandering eye or something.
Well, I've never heard him say that they're Buddhist.
Maybe he's not a Buddhist. I don't
know. Can't handle up.
Yeah, maybe so.
I don't know.
I don't know. It's very mysterious. A lot of trouble out there these day and age. Well, man, Kurt South has been here, the didactic duo. Phil and Kurt talking to you here about Mutt Lang in the vault, especially Highway to Hell. You want to just, you know what, man? Every time I'm mixing a record, sometimes I just throw on Highway to Hell, listen to the drum sounds, listen to the guitar tone, listen to how the bass sits in the mix, the vocal, and that just kind of guides me. And I'll go back and I'll think, uh-oh, listen to my mix. My vocal's way too hot. The drums are too bright. The guitars are too, you know, brittle. I need to just back off the high end a little bit. You know, whatever. I kind of compare it. It's very healthy just to go back and listen to that stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of tells you where you need to be. Do it all the time. And we'll do it for you, folks. Trinidad World Recording. Email me, phil@philpritchard.com, if you want to come see the studio, record that song for your band, or just that one song for your girlfriend or something. I don't know. We do all kinds of recordings, the point I'm trying to get across. Long, short, whatever. Download Kurt South and Phil Pritchard music at iTunes. Check it out. Or you can go to philpritchard.com, download any one of my records for $4 a piece. We want you to have it all. Thank you for joining us here on the P2 Podcast. We look forward to sharing this time with you every week. We're so grateful for all the emails. Send those emails coming in, man. I read every one of them. Start to bottom. I'll respond to it. Let you at least know that I got it, gave it a good reading. Appreciate it very much. Call me for anything you need. Book the band, 817-733-5256. My special thanks to Kurt South. What do you got coming up here, South? What are you up to? You got some gigs coming up?
I've got like 4 days off. I'm not going to do anything.
Good, man. Really? Awesome. That's nice.
Yeah.
Go see Kurt at Fred's here in town. Still doing the hipster hangover show there, man.
Yeah.
A tradition in Fort Worth unlike any other. Well, for Kurt South, this is Phil Pritchard signing off. Have a great week, folks. We'll see you next time. Take care.